Om Sang Saraswati Namaha on page 175, chapter 4 of the meditation. We meditate on she who is constantly served by all men desiring the ultimate perfection. Who is surrounded on all sides by gods. The goddess who removes difficulties, who is named Joya, victory. Her beautiful body is splendidly dark like a black cloud. With her side looks, she instills fear into multitudes of enemies. A digit of the moon has been fastened upon her head where it shines. In her hands, she holds a conch, discus, a small sword or scimitar, and a trident. She has three eyes. She stands leaning upon the shoulders of a lion, and her radiant illumination has completely filled the three worlds. Om, the Rishi said, after the death of that excessively forceful and evil thought, the great ego, and the destruction of his army of perturbations by the hand of the divine goddess, the rule of the pure, Indra, along with other divine ones, all the gods and goddesses joined with Indra, with their heads bowed in reverence, we began to sing a hymn of praise to the Supreme Empress. Their beautiful bodies were filled with excessive delight and pleasurable excitement. Now we get to sing the song to describe her and her valor and her energy and her prowess and how she was so beneficent to us in taking away the ego from us and reminding us of our divine nature, letting us go back to heaven. Her intrinsic nature is the aggregate energy of all the gods. Remember, in the second chapter, we all put forth our lights to the edification of the goddess of radiant light. With her energy, she pervades the entire universe. She is the most highly regarded by all the gods and seers of sacred wisdom. To the mother of the universe, with the greatest intensity of devotion, we give reverence unto her. May she grant us all welfare. Whose incomparable greatness and strength, the Lord of the universe, masculine, who creates, preserves, and dissolves the creation, is incapable to extol. May that Supreme Empress, she who tears apart thought, think to protect the entire gross world and destroy fear and impurity. She is the goddess of true wealth in the homes of virtuous souls, and is the misery of those who perform evil. She's both, because she's the energy of all in everything. She is intelligence in the hearts of the pure-minded, faith to the truthful, humility to the truly noble. To that divine goddess we bow in reverence. Please protect the entire universe. How can we describe your inconceivable form or your uncanny behavior displayed in the battle between all the gods and thoughts? How you valiantly slew the thoughts and other evil ones? It's impossible for us. We have mouths. You are everywhere. How can our limited mouth speak of the infinite? In the origin of all perceivable existence, you are the cause. Within, you are the three qualities of nature, conception, activity, and rest. Satrajantama. These three exist in you, but you have no connection with any of their defects. So if there's any negative part of Satrajantama, that's not the part of you that we're describing. It's our own perception. It's good or bad in relation to our desire. It has nothing to do with you. We're not describing your defect. We're describing our desire. And that's what we call good or bad. If it edifies our desire, then we call it good. If it's in derogation of our desire, we say it's bad. You are beyond the conception of the Supreme Consciousness and the Great God and other gods. You are the support of all. This entire perceivable universe is only a portion of your being because you are the imperceptible primordial being, the supreme nature, Mula Prakriti. Remember, Pra means before, Kri means becoming, Iti means this. Mul means the root. The root of all that was before becoming this. O divine goddess, in all sacrifices, you are the word Swaha. I am one with God, by whose pronunciation all gods win contentment. Remember, Swa means our own, and Ha means Ishwar, and Ishwar is my own, Swaha. I am one with God. Moreover, you are performed by all people as oblations of ancestral praise, Swadha. The cause of satisfactions to the ancestors, reeling those who support Dha, Dharn, are our own Swa. O goddess, for those who seek realization, the inculcation of absolute freedom, inconceivable are the great austerities to be performed to be devoid of all defects. Having the senses subdued, complying with the essence of the principles of truth. O Supreme Empress, the wise who practice yearning for liberation, that ultimate knowledge of realization is you. Now, if you think it's difficult now, we're only performing the great austerities which are conceivable. According to this text, inconceivable are the great austerities that must be performed in order to become completely pure. We've only scratched the tip of the iceberg because inconceivable austerities will be required of us. And we're having so much trouble with the conceivable ones. You are the intrinsic nature of sound and exceedingly pure as the Rig Veda, the Ajurveda, and the Sama Veda with the special mode of pronunciation of songs in praise of the divine called the Udgit. The Udgita. The song which rises. You are the foundation. You are the three Vedas and the Supreme Empress. The generation and protection of the universe is the activity that you manifest. You are the destroyer of fear and torment in the entire perceivable universe. O goddess, you are the energy of intelligence by which the essence of all scriptures is understood. As the goddess who relieves afflictions, you are the boat that takes aspirants across the difficult sea of worldly thoughts unbound by attachment. You manifest as the goddess of wealth in the heart of consciousness to do battle with the desires of want, and as the goddess of light to Lord Shiva, who wears the moon as a deity. The smile on your face shines pure like the splendor of the full moon's reflection. or like excellent gold, desirable as beauty enhanced by love. Yet still, after seeing that beauty, the great ego struck out in anger. This is a greatly incomprehensible act. How is it that the ego, when he sees such beauty as your radiance, he could even think that he would battle with you? He would fight with you? This is totally inconceivable. Why wouldn't he just say, cut here, please, quickly? Oh, goddess, it is even more incredulous still that the great ego did not quit his life immediately upon seeing your wrathful face. Terrible, with brows knit and a reddish hue like the rising moon, for who can maintain his individual self upon seeing the ruler of dissolution? Though in the battle you got angry and you frowned, it's amazing that the ego didn't disintegrate right there on the spot, just seeing the anger in your face. Because who can maintain themselves? Who can live in the face of the anger of the Supreme? Who would want to? Oh, goddess, be gracious. When you are pleased, as the intrinsic nature of the universal soul, the entire world enjoys welfare and prosperity. And when your anger is known, immediately the entire families of enmity are destroyed, as we have verified the moment when the great ego with his extensive forces met his demise. If you're happy, everybody's happy. And if you're not, everybody better run for cover. And we just saw, when you weren't happy, the great ego and all the thoughts were immediately destroyed like grass and timber before a forest conflagration. Whoosh, just went up in smoke. Oh, you who are the grantor of all welfare, those with whom you are pleased are certainly respected in their country. They are endowed with welfare, and their acts of wisdom and harmony do not perish. They are blessed by the devotion of their children, wives, and servants. By your grace, O goddess, the meritorious souls perform every day all actions of spiritual discipline and righteous conduct with the greatest of faith and devotion, and thereby attain to heavenly perception. That's your grace. Remember, kripa. Kri means do. Pa means get. The grace is what we do is what we get. And if we do every day the spiritual discipline and righteous conduct with the greatest of faith and devotion, we get her grace. Are you not therefore the grantor of all fruit in the three worlds? Of course you are. You are the manifestation, the embodiment of grace. You are Kripa defined. O reliever of difficulties, remembering you, the fear of all living beings is dispelled. When remembered by those individuals in the harmony of spiritual growth, you increase their welfare and intelligence. Who is like you, O dispeller of poverty, pain, and fear, whose sympathetic demeanor always extends compassionate assistance to everyone? You have this behavior which is so sympathetic and so compassionate, and you're always assisting everyone. No malice towards any. Only pure, sympathetic, and compassionate assistance is being extended. The entire cosmos is pleased by the destruction of this enmity. And even though these ill-advised beings committed sins sufficient to warrant an infinite suffering in hell, nevertheless, let them attain to the realms of heaven by meeting their demise in the battle with me. Thus thinking, O goddess, certainly you destroy all enmity. So that is, whenever we're confronted with any obstruction or any obstacle or any enmity whatsoever, we can just pronounce those words, go to heaven. We bless you with liberation. You don't have to act in an evil way anymore. Thinking this way, we certainly destroy all enmity. Even though they deserve to go someplace else. Let's just send them to heaven and bless them with liberation. And thinking thusly, she destroys all enmity. She removes all hostility. She destroys all conflict and all obstacles. Why is it that your one glance does not reduce all thoughts to ashes? So that being purified by the weapons, these thoughts may be raised to the higher worlds. You are so benevolent that you think for the welfare of even your enemies. So the reason she doesn't destroy them with one glance is that being destroyed in the fight, they are purified and they get to ascend to a higher realm of consciousness. And that's her benevolence. If your sword's light and the foremost dazzling radiance from your pike did not blind the eyes of the thoughts, the reason was that they also saw the rays of light like the glow of the moon, the giver of bliss in perceiving the vision of your beautiful face. So here's the heat and light that comes from the glistening and the radiance of the sword and the spear. That should be blinding light, but comparing with it, the beautiful cooling glow of her face, which is like the cooling rays of the moon. So when they get the heat from the glistening sword, they get the cooling rays of the moon from the vision of her beautiful face. Oh, goddess, your inclination is to eradicate the faulty concept of the wicked. With the vision of your form, no other concept may be contemplated, as no other similar exists. So if we really see her, we forget all the rest. No other concept can be contemplated. Hence, your strength and prowess in slaying these thoughts who are destroying the power of the gods, thus you manifest your compassion to the enemies. When we see her, and really see her, no other concept can exist at that time. And when we're totally focused on her, all the thoughts become disempowered. They no longer have any energy. They have no capacity to captivate our attention. And that's her, the manifestation of her compassion. O goddess, granter of wishes, with what can your valor be compared? You give fear to enemies with your excessive beauty. Where is a form beyond your own? Kindness in the heart and severity in battle. In all the three worlds, these two can only be seen in you. By slaying these enemies, you have protected the entire three worlds. By dying on the battlefield, these enemies have arrived in heaven, and you have dispelled all our fears of thoughts. We bow to you. O goddess, protect us with your spear. Mother of the universe, protect us with your sword. Protect us with the sound of your bell, and protect us with the twang of your bowstring. Protect us in the east, protect us in the west. Oh, you who tear apart thought, protect us in the south. Then rotate your spear and protect us in the north. In the three worlds, there are forms of your exquisite beauty and others exceedingly frightful that are conceived. Dharma and Adharma. With all of them, protect us and protect the world. O Mother of the Universe, protect us everywhere and every time with your sword, your spear, your club. Protect us on every side with every weapon that is in your lovely hands. The Rishi said, thus the gods sang praise to the creator of the perceivable universe and worshipped her with flowers and perfume and other items of the Garden of Delight. When all united in the fullest heavenly devotion and offered incense, fragrances, and food, then they all bowed down to the goddess in obeisance, and in serene countenance she spoke to them. The goddess said, I will grant you the fulfillment of your desire. Choose the boon that you desire, and let me know. I'm pleased with you. I like your song. What do you want? And the god said, the Supreme Empress has fulfilled our every desire, and there is nothing that remains undone. You've already taken away the great eagle. What else do we want? Our enemy, the great ego, has been slain. O great seer of all, beyond that you desire to grant us a boon? Then whenever we will remember you, then and there you will give us intuitive vision and remove our greatest distress. Hey, gods and goddesses, pretty good. Whenever we remember you, immediately, you'll just give us intuitive vision and remove the cause of all concern. Pretty good boon. And, O Mother of the Universe, there's a little attachment there. Whatever humans praise you with these verses, may you increase their knowledge, prosperity, and greatness, as well as their other possessions in life. O Mother, always be pleased with us and grant us welfare and prosperity. So now there are two parts to the boon. For the gods and goddesses, like all the divine beings that are assembled here, whenever we remember you, you'll give us intuitive vision and remove any cause for concern. And now for any human being who wants to chant these verses, you will increase knowledge, prosperity, and greatness. You give them every blessing for welfare. All the possessions of life will be protected. And always be pleased with us and grant us welfare and prosperity. The Rishi said, O King, when the gods prayed for the welfare of themselves and the world, the excellent one beyond time was pleased and said, let it be so, evamastu, banished from sight. Your Highness, I have told you the story of how in times of old the goddess who desires the welfare of the three worlds was manifested from the bodies of the gods. And now, O virtuous soul, in like manner I shall narrate to you of her appearance from the body of the goddess of light, the slayer of the vicious thoughts, self-conceit, and self-deprecation, and the giver of assistance to the gods in order to protect all the worlds. Please listen to this entire episode narrated being narrated by me, Rim Om. Iti Chaturtho Adhyaya. That's the fourth chapter. So now here all the gods, in celebration of the demise of the great ego, we get together and sing this beautiful hymn to the goddess, describing her nature and describing her beauty and describing her strength and appreciating what she's done for us by removing all the ego from our midst. And the goddess says to us, I like your song, I'll give you a boon. And we said, goddess, any god or goddess who remembers you immediately gets intuitive vision and has no more cause for feeling separate. No more cause for any disturbance or disruption of the peace of the soul. And any human being who sings this verse, they'll get increase in wisdom, increase in inner light, their knowledge and prosperity and their greatness will just continue to increase. And the goddess said, I like that blessing. I'm giving it to you. Tathastu. And she gave us the blessing. And that was the subject matter of chapter 4. And now the rishi is telling to the king, and remember he's narrating the story to the king and the businessman, I've got a third story to tell you. The first one was about Mahakali taking too much and too little and putting them into balance. The second one is a story of the great ego meeting his demise at the hands of the Divine Mother and the destruction of his extensive armies. And now, O virtuous souls, I'm going to tell you the story of how again she manifested from the body of the goddess of light in order to take away self-conceit and self-deprecation. And that's the story we'll start in our next session. Do we have any questions about chapter 4? Yes, please.
Could you explain the line, you give fear to enemies with your excessive beauty, please?
Yes, I sure can. Because when she is so beautiful to look at, the enemies become afraid seeing that beauty. She is so beautiful, they know she's going to captivate the consciousness of anyone who looks upon her. And immediately all duality will cease. Isn't that frightening to the great ego? The great ego would probably say, don't look at her. If you look at her, that's going to cause my demise. Don't even look that direction. Don't even come in the gate. Just keep going down the highway. These people don't have permits. You can't go there. Don't look at them. Because if you look at them, she will captivate your consciousness and you'll forget all about me. Me! That's the beauty that she radiates all the time. Nita, do you have a question? Yes.
And the first one was I, and then I think after the concluding it's Kling.
Yes, Aim, Rain, Kling.
Is there significance with each episode and each mantra that you can connect to?
Aim, Rain, Kling. Chamundai, Biche. They are what is rotating on the stage of consciousness, constantly revolving. This whole story is the story of Aim, Rain, Kling. We found it in the first chapter. We found it in the Devyatharva Shirsham. We're going to find it in the Suddhi Kunjika Stotram. We find it in the Nabarnabhidi before and after the 700 verses. Aim, Rain, Clean. It follows us all through the text. Continually manifesting again and again. When we put too much and too little into balance, we get filled with aim. When we cut down the great ego and his extensive armies, we start to see the aim. And at the death of self-conceit and self-deprecation, we move into the claim. And they are constantly revolving on the stage of consciousness. That's our mool mantra. Are there other questions? Bijay.
When there is no ego, where does self-conceit and self-deprecation come from?
They come from the dirt of Vishnu's ears, just like Madhu and Kaitabhadu. If you put two weights exactly equal and a balance, the scale will balance. And after some time, it will tip. We can only maintain perfect equilibrium for some time, because inside the weights, there is a vibration. There are protons, neutrons, electrons, quarks, all revolving around the nucleus of the atom. They're not all vibrating at exactly the same rate. And after some time, the scale will tip. So here comes self-conceit and self-deprecation. Here comes dharma and adharma. From duality is born the opposites. And when the opposites come into contact, there's conflict. That conflict creates vibration. And the vibration creates heat. And the heat is called tapas. And that tapas, vibration, the heat from the vibration is inherent in the creation. It's either fully potential or it becomes kinetic. That energy. All the energy becomes stored in Amamthanag with Vishnu, the consciousness of the universe, sleeping, laying down, reposing on the sofa, on the couch of Amamtha. The couch of all potential energy. And then Amamtha raises his head. Shiva opens his eyes. And from Sada Shiva and Shakti Tattva, we have Ishwar Tattva, and then we have Shuddh Vidya. And then he opens his eyes fully. And there she is, Maya. And then there's the duality again. So that's how, again and again, the creation is totally consumed and absorbed into the being of consciousness. And again, issues forth into the world of duality. Lata, you had a question.
Yes, probably it was more of a general pranayama question.
Certainly.
And I was curious when you said that you take one inhalation.
Yes.
Can you do 3 verses 2? Or I don't
yes.
know, do 2, 4, 6, no, multiples of 2?
Yes.
Or can you do an odd numbers as well?
Generally, you would want to build up to it. You may do 1 verse per breath, and then you could do 1.5 verses per breath. Then you could do 2 verses per breath. Then 2.5 verses per breath. Then you would do 3 verses per breath and continue to expand.
There is no hard and fast rule in multiples of 2 or anything like
that. No. But when you take one rhythm for pranayama, you should try to maintain consistency. That's where the yam comes from. The consistency. So if you're going to chant the Chandipat at 2 verses per breath, do the entire thing at 2 verses per breath. If you're going to chant it at 3 verses per breath, don't do some at 2 verses and some at 3. Try to the best of your capacity to take a deeper breath and wait a little bit longer on the kumbhak so that you can express 3 verses as you're exhaling. So take your time and do it consistently. Consistency is the yam. Other questions? Yes? Yes.
And then the long verses we were just chanting.
Yes. You'll feel how to improvise, and there's a lot of leeway to improvise. The 700 verses of the Chandipat is really a poetic license. Remember, there are not 700 verses, there are 584 verses, there are 64 odd verses. There are a number of uvachas. I don't have the... Do you have your Gita Press Wala? Can I answer? No. All right. There's a specific count. There are 44 namastashis. Each one of those, they are really counting swahas. So the uvachas and the half verses, wherever there are two lines, there is a swaha offered. And at the swahas, there are really 700 swahas in the Chandipat. So there is much room for improvisation. Yes?
It seems that Mother wants to take away the ego. So internally, the ego is gone, we're in our hearts, the balance of the three gunas, you're beyond the three gunas. You're aware of being beyond the three gunas, and you're aware of being in activity. You're in activity, but there can't be that same balance in activity.
That's correct.
And so, historically, Ayodhya, a place where everyone had, was more sattvic, And there was more righteousness and more dharma, but still some adharma.
Correct.
There can never be this idea of heaven on earth, because the relative is always a balancing between the three gunas. But you have unbounded satchit ananda inside.
Well, that's the heaven on earth, is heaven for me, in my place where I dwell. And I may go outside from my heaven and visit someone else's space where they dwell. I don't have to dissolve my heaven. I still live in heaven, even though I'm visiting somebody else's realm. My home is heaven. So heaven on earth does exist, but it's a place inside. As long as there's dharma, there will be adharma. As long as there are two, then there will be some contention, some striving, something to work out, a negotiation.
Okay. But then Ayodhya existed, correct?
Ayodhya
existed, a place.
Yes.
And in that place, there was more dharma, or can there ever be more dharma than a dharma? I can't see that there can be by this definition of always being some contention, always being some friction.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ayodhya is not necessarily a geographical location. Yud means war, and Ayud means without war. And Ayodhya is the place where there is no war, the place of perfect peace, the place where Ram is the king. Eternal. And remember, the Ra means the subtle body, and the Ah means the manifestation of consciousness, and the Ma means the perfection of the manifestation of consciousness in the subtle body dwells in Ayodhya eternally, the place of perfect peace. So there is no Adharma. But when we come out and look at the geography, we find occasionally reasons for conflict.
So there never can be on this earth, in the gross world, a long-term balance of the three goods?
No, there cannot. When it's manifested, then the three gunas are not in perfect balance. Always there's a preponderance of one guna over the other two. If all three gunas are in perfect balance, it's called nirguna. And nirguna means without manifestation. When we see manifest existence, we're seeing saguna, with qualities. And one quality is always predominant over the other two. So nirgun means without qualities. And everything manifest has quality, from Brahma to a blade of grass. So when we want to dwell in nirgun, we have to go inside, withdraw our senses from the external world. But if we would work out the means of negotiating amicably, if we could increase communication and increase our capacity to resolve our differences so that it's fair for everyone, so that it works for everyone, then we can certainly reduce the amount of conflict that we have in our world, in all the worlds, wherever we go. Well, yug is a... It refers to a paradigm of reality, a paradigm where we enter into a certain consciousness, a state of consciousness, and there's a preponderance of that state of consciousness over the whole earth or the whole creation. So in Sattva Yug, there was a preponderance of Sattva. In Treta Yuga, there was a preponderance they say that the Yuga Dharma is like a cow who stands on 4 feet. And the 4 feet are Dharma, Gyan, Vairagya, and Seva. Dharma, the ideal of perfection, Gyan, wisdom, Vairagya, renunciation, and Seva, is service. And the cow in the Satya Yuga is standing on all 4 legs. And at the end of that Satya Yuga, he puts down one of his feet. So then he puts down the foot of Dharma. And then all that left is Vairagya, and Gyan, and Seva. And at the end of the Treta Yuga, he puts down the foot of Gyan. So that in Dwapar In the yuga of Krishna, all that's left is vairagya and seva. And at the end of the Dwapar Yuga, he puts down the foot of vairagya. And in the Kali Yuga, the cow has only one foot up. And that's seva, service of the gods. And at the end of the Kali Yuga, he lays down. Amba. So that's how the yuga, each yuga has its own dharma, its preponderance of activity, its paradigm of reality, which exists in that time space. Well, we also agree that that yuga is a way of looking at the world. Where are you at? There's a shamashti yuga, and there's a byakti yuga. There's a yuga for a preponderance of all the people of the world, and there's a yuga dharma for the individual. So if you look at the way Sri Ma lives, she lives in Satyuga. And every now and then she ventures out and visits the other yugas. However, her paradigm of reality, her focus, her attentiveness is in Sattva. Sometimes you go to Ayodhya or Mithila, Janakpur it's called now, in used to be in northern Bihar. It's in Nepal now, in the Nepal Tirai. And Ram is still the king of Ayodhya. And everywhere you go, you know it's Treta Yuga. Often if you go to Vrindavan, everyone will address you as Radhe. Radhe, Radhe. And you know it's Dwapar Yuga. And Krishna is still the king of Mathur. And you go to downtown San Francisco, walk down Montgomery Street, and you know it's Kali Yuga. There's a Yuga Dharma where the individuals perceive according to the preponderance of their society. But we being free-thinking individuals and gods and goddesses, we can change our yugas just as we change our location. It's really a mode of perception. What do we wish to perceive? Any other questions in chapter 4? Yes, please. There is just so many austerities, so many ways that we have to perform the tapasya, so many ways that we're called upon to make sacrifice. We can't even conceive of all the ways that we will be called upon to make sacrifice in order to become completely pure so that we can inculcate the aspects of realization. It's hard enough for us to do the ones we can conceive. And that's what's so magnificent about the tapasya of the Chandipat. It says, you can do this. Sit this way, breathe this way, read this way, chant this way, focus your attention, focus your senses, bring your breath into harmony. There's a system by which to do it. Those are the austerities which are conceivable. And now she's saying, inconceivable are the rest. As you go deeper and deeper into the sadhana, you are going to be called upon to make sacrifices which you never conceived which were necessary, or even were available to you.
Does it also mean transcendental or
yes.
Non-conceivable?
Non-conceivable. You cannot conceive of all that you're going to have to give up. You have to give up the ego itself. You have to give up all the attachments of the ego. How else can you be without the ego? It's inconceivable. You cannot begin to conceive what it means to give up the ego and all its attachments.
At that time, you're austerities
on another level, right? In the inconceivable austerities.
Asiddhapat?
Asiddhapat is an abbreviated pot straight through from the Ratri Shukta, Nabarnabhidi, the 700 verses, the Nabarnabhidi again, and the Rig Vedic Devi Shukta. That's called Asiddhapat because it goes straight through. Now, this entire text is called the Sharanga Chandipat. The Chandipat with six limbs. The six limbs are the kabach, the armor of the goddess, the orgo, the bolt, and the kilakam. And then the 700 verses, and then the rahasyatraya, the three secrets at the end. So the whole book is called Sharanga Chandipat. Siddhapat is an abbreviated part. And Uttapat is reading the Siddhapat backwards. So you start at the back of the book, you work your way front. And pretty soon we'll be doing it Siddha Ulta, Ulta Siddha. And there are various forms of disciplines that can be conceived, that we can perform in perfecting our recitation of the Chandipat. And in expanding the length of our asan, empowering the mantras through samput, which is addition of one mantra before and after each of the mantras of the chandi. These are other austerities which are conceivable. Om Sang Saraswati Namaha. Next time, we'll start the fifth chapter and receive the ambassador from self-conceit.